The state of Oklahoma State University, A&M then, the 50s on campus, segregation and all. Do you have recollection of what that was like?
We had a lot of people of color on the campus because of Henry Bennett, who had been a part of the Point Four program. And A&M had actually established a university in what we called Abyssinia then. Haile Selassie was the emperor. He actually came to the campus. So we had a lot of foreign students of color at Oklahoma A&M College. But we didn't have many Native American blacks, none that I can really remember, because it was just about that time that the Fisher girl went to the Supreme Court to get her admission into law school at the University of Oklahoma. But when Raymond Geary became governor, he had a very, I don't know whether it was tolerant or just pragmatic view about interracial education for blacks. When we integrated public schools in Oklahoma, it was just painless. It wasn't seamless, but it was painless. I say it wasn't seamless because there were still segregated schools because the neighborhoods were segregated. And the Bohannon decision required that in order to reach some kind of racial balance, that they had bused people from white neighborhoods to black schools and vice versa. That had a huge economic impact. I was building homes in the mid-60s when that happened, and a lot of people voted with their feet and left Oklahoma City for the outlying suburbs that I was building in Edmond, which was very much an outlying suburb at that time. But, you know, the things that I remember about Jim Crow laws, I don't even know what they were, but segregation was the segregated water fountains. They'd be right side by side, whites only, and for Negroes, it would say, and then riding on the bus. When I was growing up, we had the interurban running between Oklahoma City and out to El Reno, which I rode. A lot of the black folk rode back in the luggage portion of the interurban bus at the back. I was early adulthood when they began to integrate the restaurants like Katz and Anna Maud's cafeteria downtown. I was actually working for the city of Oklahoma City when that happened. It caused a lot of social unrest at the time because most of us had been raised in a segregated society. We didn't think anything about the equity of it. That's just the way it had been. I became a little sensitive because I realized that a couple of shades darker and I'd be right at the back of the bus. I got pretty dark in the summertime. I remember when I was a kid, I'd be outside. You know, we dressed warm in the winter and hardly at all in the summertime because we didn't have any air conditioning. So I'd get really brown. So much so that when we were going someplace, I can remember my dad, when I was a big old kid, 9 or 10, putting talcum powder on me so I wouldn't be quite so crispy brown. Being a person of color was not an asset at the time.
So it heightens the issue of it was all about the color of the skin. They would never have looked upon you, and your features were not black, mm-hmm. but they would say, well, he's Native American. Mm-hmm. And they could look at you and say, well, your skin is so dark, we question your ethnicity?
Well, that and being Native American, I mean, it's kind of cool to be Indian now. 50 years ago, it was not. The white population had really just completed wresting control of the land rights from the Indians that were here first. A lot of Indians didn't enroll because they thought it was a land grab. And it kind of turned out to be that way. If you've read the book, Waters Still Flow, by Angie Debo, is a pretty shameful account of how that land was wrested away from the Indians. I got involved in what I called Indian business in the mid-60s because in western Oklahoma, there was patent discrimination against Native Americans. A friend of mine, or became a close friend of mine, Dr. Bill Carmack at the University of Oklahoma. I remember we got him to speak to the Edmond Jaycees. I was president in 66, I think. And when he finished, he said, you're Indian, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I'm Chickasaw. And he said, well, what are you doing about it? And I said, I'm trying to make a living. Anyway, he got me involved, and it changed my life because ever thereafter, I had two agendas. One of them was the non-Indian agenda of trying to get ahead and take care of my family and build a bigger house. And the other was that the general perception of Indians at large was they were not work-wise and had a propensity for alcoholism. So I guess as I look back, a lot of what I did in the Indian world was really trying to live that down.
But was it fair to say in the 50s, the main prejudice was against blacks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Indians' life was Valhalla in comparison to what the blacks were under the Jim Crow laws. I mean, they couldn't even exercise their franchise to vote in a lot of places. Yeah. There were still towns in Oklahoma, because I was with the highway department working with contractors all over the state. There would be little towns that have signs that said, "Black man, don't let the sun set on your head." In this town at night.